In the Brooklyn Eagle, August 1, 1894, there is a story of mass psychology. In this case, too, it seems to me that the description fits maybe. Considering the way people live, it is natural to them to die imitatively. There was, in July, 1894, a panic in a large vineyard, at Collis, near Fresno, California. Somebody in this vineyard had dropped dead of heart failure. Somebody else dropped dead. A third victim had dropped and was dying. There wasn't a scientist, with a good and sticky explanation, on the place. It will be thought amusing, but the people in this vineyard believed that something uncanny was occurring, and they fled. Everybody has left the place, and the authorities are preparing to begin a searching investigation. Anything more upon this subject is not findable. That is the usual experience after an announcement of a searching investigation. If something can't be described any other way, it's mass psychology. In the town of Bradford, England, in a house, in Columbia Street, 1st of March, 1923, there was one of those occasions of the congratulations, hates, malices, and gaieties, and more or less venomous jealousies that combine in the state that is said to be merry, of a wedding party. The babble of this wedding party suddenly turned to delirium. There were screams, and guests dropped to the floor, unconscious. Wedding bells, the gongs of ambulances, 4 persons were taken to hospitals. This occurrence was told of in the London newspapers, and, though strange, it seemed that the conventional explanation fitted it. Yorkshire Evening Argus, published in Bradford March 3, 1923, particulars that make for restiveness against any conventional explanation. People in adjoining houses had been affected by this mysterious malady. Several names of families, members of which had been overcome, unaccountably, were published: Downing, Blakey, Ingram. If people, in different houses, and out of contact with one another or not so circumstanced as to mass their psychologies and all narrowly localized in one small neighborhood, were similarly affected, it seemed clear that here was a case of common exposure to something that was poisonous, or otherwise injurious. Of course an escape of gas was thought of, but there was no odor of gas. No leakage of gas was found. There was the usual searching investigation that precedes forgetfulness. It was somebody's suggestion that the mysterious malady had been caused by fumes from a nearby factory chimney. I think that the wedding party was the central circumstance, but I don't think of a factory chimney, which had never so expressed itself before, suddenly fuming at a wedding party. An Argus reporter wrote that the health officers had rejected this suggestion, and that he had investigated, and had detected no unusual odor in the neighborhood. In this occurrence at Bradford, there was no odor of gas. I have noted a case in London, in which there was an odor of gas, nevertheless this case is no less mysterious. In the Weekly Dispatch, London, June 12, 1910, it is called one of the most remarkable and mysterious cases of gas poisoning that have occurred in London in recent years. Early in the morning of June 10, a woman telephoned to a police station, telling of what she thought was an escape of gas. A policeman went to the house, which was in Neal Street, Holborn. He considered the supposed leakage alarming, and rapped on doors of another floor in the house. There was no response, and he broke down a door, finding the occupants unconscious. In 2 neighboring houses, 4 unconscious persons were found. A circumstance that was considered extraordinary was that between these 2 houses was one in which nobody was affected, and in which there was no odor of gas. The gas company sent men, who searched for a leak, but in vain. Fumes, as if from an uncommon and easily discoverable escape of gas, had overcome occupants of 3 houses, but according to the local newspaper, the Holborn Guardian, the gas company, a week later, had been unable to discover its origin. In December, 1921, there was an occurrence in the village of Zittel, Germany, London Daily News, January 2, 1922. This was in the streets of a town. Somebody dropped unconscious, and, whether in an epidemic of fright, accounted for in terms of mass psychology, or not, other persons dropped unconscious. So far no light has been thrown on the mystery. It was thought that a current of some kind had passed over the village. This resembles the occurrence at El Paso, Texas, June 19, 1929, New York, Sunday, December 6, 1930. Scores of persons, in the streets, dropped unconscious, and several of them died. Whatever appeared here was called a deadly miasma. And the linkage goes on to the scores of deaths in a fog, in the Meuse Valley, Belgium, December 5, 1930, so that one could smoothly and logically start with affairs in a girls' school, and end up with a meteorological discussion. Lloyd's Weekly News, London, January 17, 1909. Story from the Caucasian city of Baku. M. Krasilrakov, and two companions, had gone upon a hunting trip, to Sand Island, in the Caspian Sea. Nothing had been heard from them, and there was an investigation. The searchers came upon the bodies of the three men, lying in positions that indicated that they had died without a struggle. No marks of injuries, no disarrangement of clothes. At the autopsy, no trace of poison was found. The doctors, though they would not commit themselves to an explanation, thought the men had been stifled. The Observer, London, August 23, 1925. A mysterious tragedy is reported from the Polish Tatra Mountains, near the health resort of Zakopane. A party, composed of Mr. Kaznica, the judge of the Supreme Court, his wife, a 12-year-old son, and a young student of Krakow University, started in fine weather for a short excursion in the neighboring mountains. 2 days later, three of them were found dead. Mrs. Kaznica was alive. She told that all were climbing, and were in good condition, when suffocation came upon them. A stifling wind, she thought. One after another they had dropped unconscious. The post-mortem examinations revealed nothing that indicated deaths by suffocation, nor anything else that could be definitely settled upon. Some newspapers suggest a crime, but so far the case remains a mystery. There have been cases that have been called mysterious, though they seem explicable enough in known circumstances of human affairs. See a story in the New York World Telegram, March 9, 1931 about 30 men and women at work in the Howard Clothes Company factory, Nassau Street, Brooklyn. Sudden terror and a panic of these people, to get to the street. The place was filled with a pungent, sickening odor. In the street, men and women collapsed, or reeled, and wandered away, in a semi-conscious condition. Several dozen of them were carried into stores, where they were given first aid treatment, until ambulances arrived. The phenomenon occurred in the second floor of the Carey building, occupied by the clothing company. Nobody in any other part of the building was affected. All gas fixtures in the factory were intact. No gas bomb was found. Nothing was found out. But, considering many crimes of this period, the suspicion is strong that in some way, as an expression of human hatred, of origin in industrial troubles, a volume of poisonous gas had been discharged into this factory. And it may be that, in terms of revenges, we are on the track of a general expression, even if we think of a hate that could pursue people far up on a mountainside. In hosts of minds, today, are impressions that the word eerie means nothing except convenience to makers of crossword puzzles. There are gulfs of the unaccountable, but they are bridged by terminology. Four persons were taken from a wedding party to hospitals. Well, if not another case of such jocularity as mixing brickbats with confetti, it was ice cream again, and ptomaine poisoning. There is such a satisfaction in so explaining, and showing that one knows better than to sound the P in ptomaine, that probably vast holes of ignorance always will be bridged by very slender pedantries. Asphyxiation has seduced hosts of suspicions that would be resolute against such a common explanation as gas poisoning. New York, Sunday, May 22, 1928. Story from the town of Newton, Mass. In this town, a physician was, by telephone, called to the home of William M. Duncan. There was nobody to meet him at the front door, but he got into the house. He called, but nobody answered. There seemed to be nobody at home, but he went through the house. He came to a room, upon the floor of which were lying four bodies. There was no odor of gas, but the doctor worked over the four, as if upon cases of asphyxiation, and they revived, and tried to explain. Duncan had gone to this room, and, upon entering it, had dropped, unconscious. Wondering at what was delaying him, his wife had followed, and down she had fallen. One of his sons came next, and, upon entering this room, had fallen to the floor. The other son, by chance, went to this room, and felt something overcoming him. Before losing consciousness, he had staggered to the telephone. The doctor's explanation was mass psychology. It is likely that readers of The Sun were puzzled, until they came to this explanation, and then oh, of course. Mass psychology. There is a continuity of all things that makes classifications fictions. But all human knowledge depends upon arrangements. Then all books scientific, theological, philosophical are only literary. In Scotland, in the month of September, 1903, there was an occurrence that can as reasonably be considered a case of mass psychology, as can be some of the foregoing instances, but now we are emerging into data that seem to be of physical attacks. There will be more emerging. One can't, unless one be hopelessly, if not brutally, a scientist, or a logician, tie to any classification. The story is told in the Daily Messenger, Paris, September 13, 1903.